joined by Will McClay, VP of Player Personnel for the Cowboys. He's the man behind the Cowboys draft for oh so many years. Will, good afternoon.
Feliz Cinco de Mayo.
Yes, indeed.
You like Feliz, my Spanish? My
right
Spanish.
Back at you. I think you're great. You're doing an awesome job. I know you're on a tight schedule today. If we're getting too long, tell us, hey, I got to go here. So,
or you could just hang up.
Yeah, just hang up in the middle of
it. I wouldn't do that to you guys. My time is your time for now.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it. I wonder what your time is like right now. It feels like, is this the most relaxing time of the year for Will McClay? Like, am I talking to my tax guy here on April 16th? It just seems like everything led to that day, and now you might have a chance to breathe.
That's a pretty good analogy, but like your tax guy, you always have a couple guys that file taxes late, so you're still working, but not at the full pace that you normally do.
As far as coming out of this draft, I'm just wondering how different was this year than last year? I know last year's draft was virtual, but it feels like maybe most of the lead-up was very similar. How difficult, or just how different, I guess? Maybe it wasn't difficult at all. Maybe it was very easy.
It was difficult because things have changed. The way you gathered the information and what we're used to doing changed, where our scouts would go to schools and be able to watch practice and be able to talk to people face-to-face and, you know, do some of the, you know, the people reading sort of things that they do and, you know, their sources. It was very difficult because all they were able to do was go to games. There was the opt-out. There was the crazy COVID part where, there were some teams that played four games, some teams that were supposed to play games that you were scheduled to go to and the game got canceled. And then there was the whole combine aspect of it. Typically, we get over 300 players at the combine. We all get to see them. We get a chance to talk to them, look at them face-to-face. So all of that stuff was taken away. The way that we approached it, and so proud of our scouts, from just grinding the tape, we said, if we're not able to go games, we're going to know these players. So we watched 18 tape, 19 tape. We didn't know who was going to opt out. We watched 18 tape, 19 tape, and the 20 tape. And then we were able to, you know, this whole process is twofold to me. It's scouting and evaluating. Scouting, and the definition of it is gathering information and evaluating. We're evaluating the talent and the skill set. And we weren't as there wasn't as much groupthink. You think about traveling in a pack. Well, scouts typically, if they're from an area, they travel with a pack of scouts from other teams from that have the same area. And it's just human nature to start drawing comparisons and starting to get a feel for a guy, and kind of the groupthink comes in. I do believe that individual think in our work was more prevalent because we weren't on the road.
Do you have any concerns? And this is Will McClay, VP of Player Personnel for the Cowboys, been in the personnel side for the Cowboys for a long time. Do you have any concerns that because of that lack of groupthink and that lack of communication flow, that this draft possibly, not just for the Cowboys, but for the league at large, has a higher potential for players who don't turn into what you might have thought they could compared to other years?
I think it's vice versa. If the people who did the work, the complete and full work, at a different way, but now they devised their own boards without that outside influence maybe affecting the grades or the thoughts or impressions of the player. Now you had to watch the tape. And if you have we had 19 and 20 grades on all these guys because we asked the guys to grade them before we put on the grade for the 20 season. They were doing it all summer expecting this to happen. So I feel like that the people that did the work are going to be more right on their players because you had to dig for more information on the players that you like to sell those players. So I think the work was done. It was just done in a different way, and I think if you approach it the right way, you can reap the benefits.
When you grade a draft, and that's what the media wants to do the second the draft is done, that seems pretty unfair because it should take years before you really know. And I'm wondering, since you've been doing this for so long with the Cowboys, do you go back years, look at things that were done, and you know, change things up as you go in the future, looking back at, you know, things you were thinking and things perhaps that you made mistakes on?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's the only way you get better. We look at is, I mean, I go back and look at guys, and really I look at it like this. It's every 4 years. I go back 4 years from the draft because the contracts run 5 years for the first round and four years for every other round. And so what you really want to do is get a return on investment. I kind of learned that. That's my Jones speak, learn how to make money. But you want a return on investment. So if you're placing a value on a player, and our round values have definitions associated with it. So before I give this guy this round value, he should meet that expectation of that round. So I go back and look at myself, our final grades, individual scouts' grades, and say, okay, who got them right? You know, who's better at a position or another or things like that. And so we continue to go back and look at it that way. But the big thing is to get return on investment. We're investing in people, and we're throwing educated darts. And that's, you know, you really want to check all the criteria and continue to improve your system. And that's the way I look at it, is going back and trying to make sure, find out who got the right return on investment, be it us or be it another team, and why did you or why did you not get that return on investment.
This is Will McClay, VP of Player Personnel for the Cowboys. I find your job and your scouts' jobs to be fascinating because you've seen a lot of football. You coached for a long time, and now you've been in the personnel-only side for a long time. But the coaches or the coordinators can change. So, of course, now the Cowboys with their third DC in 3 years. And I'm interested in how that affects you and your guys' process of finding what that new coordinator wants. Like, will you specifically watch a player with Dan Quinn? Does he give you a general idea of what he's looking for? Is it a crash course to figure out what does Quinn want that Mike Nolan didn't? I just think that's a really interesting process to learn about.
I think they all want good football players, and coaches tend to always want guys that they coach that were great. That's always their barometer as to, you know, a player's level of skill set. But I think the best thing for us as an organization, irregardless of the coach, is to have our own values on what starting winning players are. And then finding those players at the positions that do the things that the coaches are looking for. The coaches may not have all of the information. They're looking for this or that. I think our role is to also say that we're projecting. So if we're projecting, we're looking at the traits they have, and now we're projecting that this guy fits in, and then you get him in here and you see what's actual about it. But it's, I think we have to continue to, as an organization, say, you know, what's winning in the league. Now, every now and then there's a coach that likes just a certain thing that you may get one or two of them, but the Cowboys are going to be around longer than all of us, hopefully, on this call. And you want to establish a ceiling or a picture perfect guy for the NFL. What's a winning starter, and keep that in mind. And I think that's the way you build your team, and you have an opportunity to win regardless of who the coach is.
A lot of the pre-draft talk was about the Cowboys landing one of the two big cornerbacks, Surtain or Horn, with the number 10 pick. How surprised were you guys when they went off the board right before your pick?
Jerry says it all the time. You earn the right to be at number 10. You hope you don't have it all the time. And so we looked at all of our needs, and we felt like that the corners, there were some corners that were there that were worthy of the 10th pick, and we liked them. But if we like them, then there's other people that like them because they're really good players. We do a lot of mock drafting, forecasting, talking to people, finding out who the kids have talked to. And, you know, we thought that one would probably be gone, and there was a 40% chance that two of them would be gone. Well, you get on the clock. It's like the draft that we drafted Zach Martin. You know, we were looking for Aaron Donald. We were looking for Anthony Barr. And we were looking at Ryan Shazier. They all went, they were coming down to our pick, and they all went bang, bang, bang. So you have to be prepared for that. We were, and, you know, we discussed the things. We wanted to get a corner for sure. That was a goal. That if a corner was worthy, and we felt like at least two of them were worthy. They went away, and then we had to adjust and get another damn good football player.
So as far as guys who might have had, you know, issues in their past, obviously we're talking about college age, you know, guys here, a lot of immaturity, different levels of degrees there. How do the Cowboys go about getting to the bottom of those sorts of cases and what you're comfortable with? Is it you send people to go talk to friends, family, coaches, teammates, and then that comes back to perhaps, you know, Jerry Jones or Stephen Jones? How do you guys arrive at a comfort level with players who had this or that happen in their past?
We gather as much information as possible, find out what the issues are. Then we send it to the security people that we have that do the background searches through their filters. If there's an issue that we find out that we're concerned about legally, we send that over to our legal department. They check it out. And then we gather all that information. And what I do is take it and we present the case to Stephen and Jerry with all of the facts. If there's an issue, we want to dig and find that out. And then we want to find out what was the reasoning for it and, you know, what it was. You get some of that from talking to the player. Then you dig further with the sources and you get, you know, the law enforcement information and you go and get the legal side. And then as one of the greatest things that Jerry does and I admire him for is giving people a second chance, because you think about the things that we all did when we were younger. And some of us were fortunate that there weren't cell phones and things to get you in trouble. But we look at that information and we put it in front of them and we give each case an opportunity to present itself and we look at it and Jerry makes the decision based off of the information. And I do applaud him for second chances, because if so many of us weren't given second chances in any walk of life, then we wouldn't be where we are today.
You know, I was wondering, though, because it seems you would definitely be able to do that with some of the higher-up drafted people. But what, you know, before the draft, how many people do you actually do that for? And, you know, obviously a lot of people are talking about Josh Ball at pick 138. You know, were you able to do that for Josh Ball as you were to dive into Kelvin Joseph? And as, you know, he's a much higher draft pick. I'm just wondering how far down the draft do you go? If you're drafting a guy in the seventh round, do you feel like I don't have all the information on this guy?
If anybody's on our draft board, we try and go through the same process. When there are some kids that you don't have any concern about and none of the issues come up, and then there are those that have the issues that you know about, and we go through the process of digging through, you know, starting the process. Hey, if you like them, we got a service. You go through and you look at all their social media. That tells you something about them. Then we go and we dig on any of the cases, excuse me, or information that we have found out about, that the league finds out about. And we dig on those guys. And if they're on our board, we talk about them. There are some guys that we feel like we can take. And then there are other guys that aren't on the board that we don't do that with.
What was your feeling for why Kelvin Joseph left LSU? Because I've heard he was too into rap and he was too into pot.
Well, it was the real story is he wanted to play. There were some issues and he wanted to play. And so he bet on himself. He sat out and he wanted to go play SEC football. They wanted him to play a different position. He didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to play the safety position. He thought he was a corner. He bet on himself, and he's a really, really good player that has gone through some things in his life, and he's come out of the other end, and he's ready to take advantage of the situation, and he's an NFL-level starting cornerback.
Another guy, Micah Parsons, your first pick. What was your level of concern that he opted out last year, and how difficult, you know, did you weigh that at all versus some other players who were still on the board? You know, did you give him a demerit for opting out, perhaps?
That was one of the unique things that we had to deal with this year that we hadn't before. And so we took every case and instance and we looked at it and we talked to players and we looked at different situations like the Big Ten. He opted out. If you look at the reasoning as opposed to just opting out because he was getting ready for the draft, the Big Ten was going to play, and then they weren't going to play, then they were going to play. And then NFL rules, once a player makes a decision to sign with an agent, it makes it more difficult to go back. So what went into his mindset when he was making that decision, and then what did he do afterwards? If you look at the first round of the draft, there was like six or seven guys that were, first round type players that did not play and opted out. So we took every instance and looked at what was the reasoning. One of our big questions we had to answer is, does the guy love football? That's the big one when you find guys that opt out, what's their reasoning? And then you dig to find their level of love of the game of football.
Well, we appreciate your time this afternoon. Can we ask you for one more thing, Will?
Yeah.
It's a wacky radio liner. I think we have one for the old show that was on in this time slot, but we're new. It's Dan and Jake. We would like you to identify yourself and then say, I never listened to Dan and Jake on the Ticket.
Okay. This is Will McClay, and I never listened to Dan and Jake on the Ticket.
That's it. That's how easy it was. A lot of people don't know, Will McClay used to be a weekly guest on the Ticket, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
With Richard Hunter and the Wild Ass Circus?
Yes, I was. Those were, it's kind of one of those things you talk about, things you did when you were younger that...
Got to get all the information.
We had our private investigators dig that up.
Yes.
But we've
yes.
determined that you've come out on the other side okay.
Yeah, I made it through. I made it through the circus.
Well, we really appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks.
Thank you guys very much. Appreciate you.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.